Let's try that again. Good morning. There we go. That's better. Welcome to the 2008 Ag Executive Forum. My name is Doug DeVries, and I'm with John Deere Company, and I am delighted to be your host today for this outstanding session. We've got a great lineup of speakers and subjects to talk about today, and I think you'll find it a rewarding and informational experience. And we're going to get right into it this morning, first thing, with our special guest. We are honored to have today the Secretary of Agriculture for the United States, Mr. Ed Schaefer. Ed is the 29th Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and is also a former two-term governor of North Dakota, having served from 1992 to 2000. Before entering public life, he was an executive with the Gold Seal Company in Bismarck, a successful marketer of nationally known consumer products such as Mr. Bubble, Glass Wax, and Snowy Bleach. Ed is going to talk to us today about a number of issues facing agriculture, and we look forward to that opportunity. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ed Schaefer.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks for the great introduction. Thank you for the warm welcome. I'm delighted to be with you here today for the Ag Executive Forum 2008. It's great to get out of Washington, D.C., you know, and get out of the office and be out here. I much prefer, as we say, being out in the field than sitting around the office in Washington. And it's, you know, it's really a great day. It's a great day in America. It's a great day here in St. Louis. It's fun to be with you. And despite of what your broker is telling you, you know, it is a good day in America. I'm worried about these little voter things you've got, you know, on your on your tables here. Am I going to get zapped if I don't say the right thing? Or I'm not sure what information we're building. But it reminds me all of the elections and the politics and the things that we're involved in these days. And I thought maybe I could get started here by telling you my latest political joke. You can see how this goes over on your recorders there. But I was thinking about it this morning. There's a little chill in the air. You know, we walked across the street, and I think it's starting to get cold out. And pretty soon here in the Midwest, we're going to see things start to freeze over. We're going to see ice crystals and snow. And it reminded me that, you know, there's been a secret debate taking place here in the vice presidential election arena, and some that not many of us know about. But you can pick out any politicians you want if you choose to repeat this joke. But just for the sake of me telling this morning, I'll pick two at random, you know, maybe Senator Biden and Governor Palin. It seems as if during the campaign there was a little concern that things were tied. They weren't making any headway in the debates. They were kind of going back and forth, and nobody was gaining the upper hand. So they thought, well, we'll do a competition, maybe a sporting competition. And since they're both from northern climes, they knew about ice and things. They said, well, why don't we do ice fishing? Well, everybody will go out, and we'll have the two of us will have 3 days of ice fishing, and whoever has the most fish in the end wins. So they went to North Dakota, of course, kind of halfway between Alaska and Delaware, and they had this ice fishing contest, and they got all geared up. They got their equipment. They went out, and the first day, Governor Palin came back, and she had five nice walleye from this lake. And Senator Biden didn't have any fish. So they weighed him in and got going the next day. He said, well, you know, Senator Biden said, I can still catch up here. I'm going to do everything. They went and they fished for the second day. And the second day, Governor Palin came in with about seven nice white striped bass. And again, Senator Biden was skunked. No fish. So he was really behind the eight ball here. The third day, he's really going to go out and give it the effort. He got some new equipment. He's out there getting it going. And the third day, Governor Palin came in with 15 Lake Perch, and Senator Biden was skunked again. Of course, MSNBC had to do a big investigation. CNN sent their camera crews out. There's something wrong here, something going on. They did a big investigation, and the breaking news the next day was that Governor Palin was cheating, as she actually was cutting holes in the ice. But anyway, thank you. That's one that maybe goes over better in northern climes, but I do appreciate the opportunity to be with you. And really, I thought when your leaders decided that globalization was one of the themes of this year's forum, I doubt that they knew how spot on target that they'd be as the conference came together. Of course, the globalization that they had in mind at the time was the globalization of agriculture markets. That trend has created new opportunities for your companies in places that probably seemed unthinkable just a few short years ago. But now the roller coaster ride in the financial markets over the past few weeks has shown us another side of globalization. Technology and trade liberalization indeed have made our world flatter. And they have also made the world's financial and credit markets more interdependent than they've ever been before. And that has changed the risks and the realities of doing business in every industry. We've been seeing in real time just how connected the world's financial markets are and how quickly a problem in one market can spread to others around the world. Today, financial products are really just kind of clusters of neutrons and electrons, you know, that move at lightning speed across borders and different time zones. And the speed and portability can create depth and liquidity in financial markets. But as we've seen also, when the confidence that underpins the system is shaken, it can create illiquidity as well. For an industry like yours that depends on the free flow of credit to sell your machines around the world and to finance your own manufacturing operations here at home, this is a serious concern, and it's a difficult one. While no one can really say when this present crisis in the financial markets is going to ease, I believe that there are some positive signs on the horizon here that we should keep in mind during the drama of these day-to-day developments. For sure, the scope of this financial crisis has been wider and its impact more severe than other market breaks that we have weathered in the past in our history. But the response by government and central bankers around the world has been swift, and it's been innovative. The Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve have found new ways to do what they believe needs to be done to keep our credit markets liquid and banks supplied with funds. And they continue to adjust their tactics as the new challenges arise, which seem like about every day. Central bankers and governments in the United States and Europe and in Asia have been coordinating their actions like never before to restore the liquidity in credit markets and to reduce interest rates. This strong response should go a long way toward reassuring markets and investors. The $700 billion financial rescue plan that Congress and the President came together with on last week is a bold move. It deals directly with impaired mortgage-backed securities and has set off so much of the current turmoil in the credit markets. Our Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, is moving as quickly as possible to get this program up and running, and as the President has said, it's going to take some time before the effects are felt. It's sort of like reining in a runaway team of horses. You know, you've got to really haul back on those reins real hard for a long period of time before things start calming down. But we're fortunate, I think, in this arena that the agriculture sector is in strong financial shape. The strong commodity prices that we've been seeing until recently have helped producers pay down debt. Their farm balance sheets are generally in good shape. The competitive level of the dollar and the growing demand for foreign markets has helped boost our agriculture exports to record levels. This has given us some economic strength in the ag sector. This year, we expect ag exports to reach $114 billion and account for more than a third of the cash receipts for United States farms. In North Dakota, my home state, exports account for 50% of the agriculture production. And, you know, how important that agriculture is. Despite the increases that we've seen in the cost of fuel and fertilizer and other farm inputs, we expect net cash farm income to post an all-time high again this year at about a little over $100 billion collectively. You know, we're watching, of course, for any signs of tightening of the availability of farm credit. And so far, the system seems to remain in reasonably good shape. Much will depend on what happens with oil prices and commodity prices as we move closer to the spring planting season. But as I said, you know, things today seem to be in reasonably good shape. I can't tell you today that there are not going to be more bumps in the system, more things that we bounce around with as we move ahead. But I really think it's time to take a longer view here, to look at seriously at the decisions and policies that have brought agriculture sector to a level of prosperity and growth that is unprecedented and that we've seen recently. How we can build the foundation for continued prosperity in the future. I thought I'd just share a few thoughts about two crucial areas with this, renewable energy and trade. And I know that afterward we're going to have a chance for a little Q&A, and I'll look forward to some of your thoughts and inputs on these, but I think you're all part of an industry that knows the value of trade. U.S. companies being able to compete fairly in foreign markets on the basis of quality and price of their products is something that has really increased opportunity in the United States today. That's the main arena in which the United States producers are able to succeed. We can compete if we have that level playing field out there. As you know, the exports of agriculture equipment have been logging some pretty gratifying numbers. The Commerce Department tells us that overall sales were up 18% last year to $6.3 billion. And they're running even stronger this year. Those exports for the first half of the year were $4.1 billion, up 36% over the same period in 2007. Your companies have been doing great business with traditional trading partners like Canada and new ones like Russia. But to be able to expand existing markets and to build new ones, American producers must be able to compete on that level playing field in foreign markets. And we were visiting this morning with your executive committee. Without an agreement like Doha, an overall multilateral worldwide agreement in place, the bilateral relationships that we're developing, the country-to-country trade agreements, are going to be more important than ever as tools to open borders to our products. That's why winning the passage of the pending free trade agreements with Korea and Colombia and Panama remains one of President Bush's top priorities, and we're going to continue to work with Congress to make that happen. The free trade deal with Korea alone would give us access to a $1 trillion economy and 49 million consumers. A whole range of our agriculture products, including agriculture equipment, would benefit in a major way if Congress would ratify this agreement with Korea. Agriculture equipment exports to Korea totaled $43 million in 2006. That's the latest numbers that we have available. But that $43 million in 2006 and continuing faces tariffs that are pushing 10% out there, increasing the cost of your businesses doing trade with Korea. The agreement with Korea would immediately remove those tariffs. It would open the door to more than $10 billion in additional export sales of U.S. goods each year. And if you look at Colombia, speaking of Colombia, of course, it's the largest market for U.S. agriculture goods in South America. Last year, we sold about $1.2 billion worth of goods there, including $19 million worth of agriculture equipment. That total would undoubtedly be higher if we removed the burdens of tariffs. Those tariffs are a huge factor. We have tariffs on our agriculture goods ranging from 20% to 50%, and if you include the tariff rate quotas, you can get up to as much as 70% tariffs for our goods going into Colombia. On the other hand, virtually all of Colombia's exports to the United States come in duty-free. You know, that is a very big concern of mine. Congress just last week authorized once again the Andean Free Trade Pact. That is the agreement under which Colombia moves their goods to the United States. It allows them to bring in goods duty-free. Congress won't vote these days on the Colombian free trade agreements, which would allow our egg exports to go there duty-free. So, you know, they vote to allow Colombian products in here duty-free, but they won't vote to allow our products to go to Colombia duty-free. What's wrong with this picture? You know, that makes no sense. It really just doesn't work. And I'd urge you to look at the USDA webpage, USDA.gov. We've installed a tariff ticker on our webpage. It's ticking off the dollars that U.S. producers and manufacturers are paying in unnecessary tariffs and fees and duties to Colombia since that agreement was signed, but since it has not been ratified by Congress. It's over $1.2 billion today that would have lowered your cost of doing business, and Congress won't act. It's much the same story with Panama. The free trade agreements just level the playing fields so that we can operate there and look at and help producers that are looking to do business in these countries. Your companies deserve a chance to compete on fair terms in these markets, and that's why it's so important that Congress sees the opportunity to ratify these agreements. You know, as the Secretary of Agriculture, I live under these rules of how I can interact with Congress, how I can campaign or not. I've got the Hatch Act I've got to worry about. I have to be careful about what I say and don't say. But as I look at these agreements, in spite of all these restrictions that I'm carried, call your members of Congress, you know. Give them a call, lobby them, let them know how important these agreements are, because they're being hung up in the political structure, and in the meanwhile, it's costing your businesses money and opportunity that just shouldn't be. So well, I don't know if I just violated 10 federal rules or not, but I urge you to be involved in this effort to get these trade agreements passed. The continued development of the renewable fuels industry here at home is also critically important to the future growth of American agriculture. Earlier this week, I joined with Energy Secretary Sam Bodman in releasing the new biofuels action plan. Our two departments developed the National Biofuels Action Plan along with a half a dozen other federal agencies. And really, it's an essential roadmap that points out how we need to move forward, how we're going to meet the renewable fuel standard that is set by Congress and the President that gave us last year's energy bill. This roadmap points out the effort of pointing to feedstocks and what feedstocks and crops and cropping patterns are we going to use out there to generate ethanol in the future. It points the pathway of getting those crops from the field to the refineries. It points to what needs to be done and what barriers are in place at the refineries for commercialization of second-generation biofuels. And it points out the infrastructure to move those products in the refinery to the consumer. There are a lot of barriers in place, a lot of restrictions and things that we need to put together, but it's an opportunity to say, here's what must be done, and here's how we work together with the private and the public sectors to influence how we generate energy in this country. The Renewable Fuel Standard calls for 36 billion gallons of renewable fuels by the year 2022. 21 billion gallons of that comes from cellulosic biofuels, from second generation and third generation. I apologize, it's not even 3 a.m. But the effort is to say 21 billion gallons of our renewable fuels comes from second generation. And, you know, that says we got a cap. It says we cap 14 billion gallons of corn-based ethanol in this country. And if we're going to meet these renewable fuel standards, if we're going to go beyond a single source of feedstock for biofuels that can affect feed and food prices, we move into the second generation. We've got strong goals that we've set at this country, and they're important. If we're going to reach the 36 billion gallon goal of renewable fuels, we're going to have to push ahead with the second generation, the next generation fuels. Fuels made from waste materials, crop residues, woody biomass, even orange peels, as well as new dedicated crops like switchgrass and new growth trees and algae. A tremendous amount of opportunities are being built out there, but we need to move it out of the laboratory stage to the commercialized efforts so that we can meet these goals. This is important for the United States of America. It creates energy independence, creates economic activity, and it creates better environmental conditions for us to pursue these biofuels. The 2008 Farm Bill gave us an important boost to this effort, committed $1 billion in funds over the next 5 years to support research and development, and particularly in that second and third generation cellulosic fuels. This next phase in the development of renewable fuels will bring more jobs, more economic opportunities to rural America, more opportunities for equipment manufacturers in harvesting and distributing new feedstocks and new ways of building fuels out there. It really is showing that biofuel strength brings the biofuel strengths that it brings to this nation as a whole really cuts our dependency on foreign sources of energy and provides that economic activity that can be so gratifying for our economy these days. By holding firm to our commitments here, to our pro-growth trade and our public policy toward energy, we help create the conditions for American agriculture and American manufacturers like yourselves to continue to thrive and to prosper. I wanted to point out these two issues this morning and keeping the agriculture arena strong and healthy. I appreciate all your efforts in that arena and what you do. Thanks again for the opportunity to be with you today, and I believe we have some time now to gather your thoughts or questions or observations that you have so that we can take those back in Washington and put them to work. Thank you all. I appreciate it. Good to be with you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.